So, good morning. I didn't write my name up this time. My name is Amy Lumen. And I serve the ELCA. I have a new title, which is a lot longer. Rather than Director of Advocacy, I'm the Senior Director for Witness and Society, which just makes me sound older, I think. But my work is at the wonderful intersection between church and state, between theological discernment and political advocacy, as we help to put the church's teachings and commitments into action. What I'm going to do today, I think we're enough that we can do some brief introductions. I'd love to know why you're at this session, because I was actually originally going to do this section sort of on talking across partisan divides, which is always of interest, I think, in these days. But also then recognize, well, we have the opportunity to do something very inner Lutheran here, which is that as we are in this listening session season on church and state, to gather some feedback from a captive yet voluntary audience here at Holden Village. And I didn't know how much that would appeal, so it's great that there's some, because as I've come to experience it, these listening sessions and the input here really helps, is really going directly to those putting together this process. More about a little bit more about that in a minute. So why don't we just go around, maybe starting in the back row, say who you are and what your interest is in the topic of church, state, civic engagement.
Me?
Yes.
My name is Sue from Bellingham, and I'm just here to listen and learn.
Okay.
My name is Richard, and I'm doing the same thing.
I keep getting sidetracked. Well,
you can say pass too.
You're right here.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Emma Kate. I'm here to take notes, which is like so fun. And I'm generally just interested in how people of faith can affect change, you know, in our religion. So.
I'm Meredith Davis from Minneapolis, and I'm just interested in how, kind of what you said, but how can we actually have an impact with the huge issues going on?
Great.
My name is Kirsten. I'm always proud that the ELCA tries to have its hands, its fingers in lots of these different issues, so I just like to learn, like, what are we trying to learn and do here?
John, and I would like to know kind of what some of the things that the ELCA is working on in the political realm.
Hi, I'm Kyrie. I study political science, and I'm also a Lutheran, so this kind of brings my two passions in intersection, so that's why I'm here.
I'm Maddie, and I'm just interested in listening and learning.
Hi, I'm Laura, and my church is part of Faith Action Network in Washington State, which is where the Lutheran governmental affairs folks and everybody gets together. And I confess I haven't been very involved since the beginning when we first joined, so I'm curious to know what's happening.
We're doing introductions and what brings you here.
Okay. I'm Karen. And I'm interested in understanding more of what ELCA is doing on the synod level.
Well, I'm just about to say your name at least.
Yeah, I'm Bill, and I have a career professor at Pacific Lutheran University, although I never considered myself to be a Lutheran. I very much associated with it.
I'm Rocha Giddings, and we're Episcopalians, and our bishop is very, all the way up, very interested in all of these things and has put out encyclicals and so on. And we're studying the Roman, the Catholic bishop, the big top guy. His encyclical, that thing that I can't pronounce.
Laudato Si. Yeah. That's an excellent one.
Yeah.
Hi, Mark. I'm just interested, like many people here, in learning more. I'm Art, and I believe that God has given dominion over the earth to us, and our dominion is modeled after Jesus Christ as a loving, caring guide. And I like to see the way the ELCA responds to that.
Adam Davis, I'm interested in how a lot of American Christian churches have become much more political. So I'd like to hear how ELCA intends to navigate that.
My name is Rachel, and I'm of the Listen and Learn cohort.
My name's RJ. I feel a bit out of my element with whenever I hear the word policy, and sometimes with politics too. A lot of the work I do is more individual or interpersonal, so I'm interested in seeing how, you know, purposeful, meaningful change comes about on a more expansive level.
I'm Jamie, and yeah, just here to learn. I think it's always interesting and sometimes frustrating to me that family members who are of a different political leaning than I am seem to talk about Jesus in very different ways than I do, and it affects their politics and my politics. So I just always think about either sides of the political divide claiming to represent Jesus in very different ways. So, yeah, just curious about
ELCA's take. Great. So I've heard all your, some of the questions. Oh, introduce yourself, and if you want to say why you're here.
David Dawson. Why I'm at your class?
Yeah.
Well,
the honest truth now.
I'll try to make this short. I'm a retired pastor, Lutheran pastor, and I'm 80, so I'm enjoying my irrelevancy. So I was thinking. So one of I had a conversation, you know, with a Roman Catholic person about the sins of our churches, and theirs was one. And I said, and maybe this is just projection, but I thought one of the sins of the Lutheran Church from my age was quietism, that we didn't know how to speak or act in these issues. And so that's why I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think.
I think that's a good motivation, repentance, confession, and being set free to do more. So disclaimer, this session is less about me talking than about receiving the input from the gathered community, which is not dependent upon being Lutheran at all, for input as we struggle or navigate as a church to state what is our relationship, what is our view of government, what is our relationship with the state. And particularly interesting, I really think in the last year or two, there may be issues coming into that we may not have anticipated 2 years ago, the rise of white Christian nationalism, January 6th, and how we relate to some of these newer streams of how Christians are viewing and responding to the state. Here's what I'm going to do. Romp through some slideshow to talk about our basis for any political involvement, any political advocacy we do as a church is grounded in our social teaching. Many denominations, have their own body of this, and we do as well as Lutherans. And if we don't have social teaching on it, I actually can't advocate on it. For example, we actually don't have we don't have anything that really guides us around drones and use of drones, which is of course a large concern. When we talk about indiscriminate killing, and proportionality. And so someday I hope we do. So
what's at stake in some ways in this process is giving us guidance and teaching. And so I want to give you a little bit of the foundation of that. Then we'll do the listening session portion, and these are being held all over the country over the last couple months and through the summer. And this input, it will go directly to the task force that then is shaping a study document that will come back to congregations. I could come back to Holden with it next year and do a couple sessions. A study document around questions around church, state, civic engagement, and how we engage as people of faith in that arena. And I'll talk about that process a little more. So you're part of a chorus. What I've been really pleased to see is how much this input is already that's already flowed in is helping to shape what is happening as a task force does this as at a national level. But then after that, I've heard a lot of questions, what is the ELCA doing? What do we focus on in policy? For those who want to remain for just a free-for-all questions, we can do that. And I'm also glad after this, you know, to talk about any specific issues, our ecumenical cooperation. We do very little alone, just as the ELCA. There's actually about 60 faith-based groups on Capitol Hill. You know, your run-of-the-mill Protestant denominations, many Roman Catholic orders, and then sort of pan-Christian or pan-ecumenical organizations, you know, like Sojourners or Bread for the World or other organizations that, and we all cooperate together. And we all strategize together, and we often, much of what we do when we have agreement is that we are addressing Congress together because we're more powerful together, right, than we are apart. So anything, free for all, popcorn, question, answer, so let's just do that. But just to set the scene, so the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America understands itself as called by God to address social issues. And I think that's important to say, you know, in our baptismal affirmation, that we are, you know, there are several things that we commit to and are called to, and one is to strive for justice and peace throughout the earth. That's part of our baptismal promise and pledge and reminder, and that it's not, we don't do it just because we think we should do it. We understand that it's a call by God. We understand that within our baptism, within our discipleship, is a call to justice, justice doing, and to peacemaking. And then this, our foundational social statement is called Church and Society. The witness of this church flows from its identity as a community that lives from and for the gospel. So the gospel informs what we do, and we also live for it, and how we understand that gospel message is to be lived out. And then this is straight from Luther, right? Faith is active in love. Right, our faith isn't just goes forth. It happens in loving action, in loving attention to the world, and especially that love calls for justice in relationship and structures of society. I'm terrible at quoting other people. It was Mother Teresa, I think, who talked about how we are called to do small things with great love. You know, even the most insignificant thing, to do it with great love. I think that's echoed, in a Lutheran understanding that the love of God, one of our social statements says, you know, the God who justifies us, right, who makes us right, who forgives us, calls us to do justice. So that by being reconciled with God, you know, through our sin and from our sin, it doesn't end there. That's not that an end. God's forgiveness of us is a beginning, and that love propels us forward. And so therefore, as a church, we're not just individuals reacting to what we feel passionate about. We also do it collectively as a church. And so we understand ourselves to be a community where open, passionate, and respectful deliberation happens on the issues of the day. And that is expected and encouraged. So question, in your congregations, does that happen? Are there forums, are there places that and spaces created for this kind of discussion? Nods? Anyone want to give an answer of a discussion that you've had recently around an issue? Yeah.
My church just had another group on, Earth issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I will say, as I travel around and speak to churches, and this is one of the hardest things, though, often, is that, you know, we prepare leaders for churches, but not necessarily to lead these kind of, you're nodding, to, especially in this hyper-partisan environment that we're in. I don't think much of our training has equipped us, not just to do the convening, but the kind of deep listening and the respectful listening that that calls for. But we understand ourselves as a church to be called to this. Yes?
Well, you asked the question whether this goes on in churches, and I think, I'm from Minnesota, so of course there's a Lutheran church anywhere you want to find one. But because of that, you know, there was an article in the paper even about destination churches, you know, that people are choosing churches for different reasons, not because it's a mile from their home. And I know that's the case with our church, and so we can have open, passionate, and religious deliberation a lot, but 95.5% of all the people that have chosen our church basically feel the same way, which is great in terms of perhaps getting some things done or, you know, forming an action plan. But then in terms of my dealing with people that are not, that don't see the right way like I do, you know, then I'm more isolated. And so, you know, it's I think it's interesting or hard.
I think as we build our bubbles, you know, in the U.S., and I'll say having lived in D.C. now for 6 years, I came from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is, you know, a very red part of the state. And the kind of learnings, kind of relationships I built there were very helpful for me to learn how other people saw the world. But I have to say, living in D.C., you know, I realized how distant, you know, I have to reach back in my memory for that and finding those ways to engage with people unlike me. I think what the church is there for. I think we're still a place, and you know, when you say how does the ELCA do our public policy work, I think the church and faith spaces can still be a meeting point. You know, an encouraging bipartisan work. You know, one interesting thing going on in D.C., there's a bipartisan climate caucus, so that if a Democrat wants to join, they have to bring a Republican member of Congress with them. Mm-hmm. And so there's an intentionality. There's always going to sort of be an even, but it has to be people willing to speak about, they want to deal with the issue, but there's an understanding we can't just be talking to ourselves, you know, those who are like-minded. But and I think often the space for that caucus, they sometimes met, the Quakers have a lovely meeting space on Capitol Hill. The Quakers have hosted that, say, we encourage and support this as a faith community. Yes?
Would you consider, we come from the Detroit area, and feeding to the poor, mm-hmm. would that be considered part of this open, compassionate,
so
respectful deliberation?
Yeah. Feeding of the poor, but that's done through service and charity, through the direct feeding work, but it also needs to be done through the work of justice, which is policy, to make sure that, I shared with the group yesterday, I work a lot with Bread for the World, and they have this wonderful graphic that shows 24 grocery bags. And, you know, when you do the exercise, you ask, how many of these represent what churches, faith communities, and voluntary groups are doing to feed, to meet the need for food insecurity in the U.S. And people will guess their numbers, but the answer is one. You know, one out of 24 meets, we meet 1/24. All of the food pantries, all of the meal programs, all of the food banks together meet 1/4 of the need. And it's government, it's programs, it's SNAP, it's WIC, it's after school feeding programs. That are doing 3/24. The number's a little different today, and of course, we were on a trajectory to try to end food insecurity in the U.S. by 2030. The pandemic has just changed that totally. But so yes, so that is one way, but we do it through direct service, and the work of ELCA World Hunger is something I'm extremely proud of. $20 million a year that's raised. About 70% of it goes globally, 30% here at home, that to address food security through direct service, but also through public policy. Just briefly, inner Lutheran nerd stuff. We do have an ARPA constitution as well. I always, because there's always people who say, well, we should, church shouldn't be involved in politics. But we have a commitment in our constitution to study social issues and work with civil authorities in areas of mutual endeavor while maintaining separation of church and state.
I went too far.
I forget it. So when we have our social teaching documents, and I'll run through them in a minute, these are theological statements. We understand that these are built on our understanding of Scripture, Lutheran theological discernment, and they're teaching documents. And often, I've been asked a lot in the last 2 weeks about our abortion statement. It was one of the first statements passed because of a desire and a need in the church for it. And it gives a theological consideration of the matter of abortion. And we can also talk about more about what's in that and the unique Lutheran teaching about that. But they're teaching documents. They're meant to be instructional. And they involve us in ongoing reflection so that many churches study them together. And they can be a good way, without talking about a current hot topic issue, to consider something maybe when it's a little less hot and to do some discernment on it. Our social teaching documents also happen with deliberation. That's what's going to be happening right here in the next couple of years. They guide our institutional life, again, which means I need the social teaching to be able to advocate on certain things, and they're intended to be used widely. Skip that. We have three types of documents. We have social statements, which are the long ones. And they're all on the ELCA website that are broad documents that are adopted by the churchwide assembly that takes place every 3 years. We have social messages, which are shorter, and they're usually built on an existing statement document. And I'll show you what I mean in a minute. And then resolutions that often direct our DC office to do certain things. That say we resolve to work on one specific issue or topic. So what we have as a church, kind of interesting, the very first year the ELCA came together. One is, what do we think about church and society? What's the role of the church in serving and in doing justice? And then, look, two bans, abortion and the death penalty as being two pressing issues that were handled together. Then after that, caring for creation, vision, hope, and justice. Again, the environmental movement was certainly in swing then, but I think the environmental awareness right now in congregations is much, much greater. It's an old statement. It does mention global warming, which I think is quite significant, but we are this year preparing a new social message on specifically on climate change, because that work has become so much more, all-encompassing. There's so many areas in which we address climate change, from mitigation and adaptation and loss and damages, climate finance. There's so many policy ways that we need to be addressing it. That'll give us some more tools for that. Also that same year, race, ethnicity, and culture, dealing with racism in church and society. Then peace, then economic life, healthcare, education, human sexuality, genetics, church and criminal justice, women and justice, and up next, church and state. Then there are so those are our big weight-bearing, columns. So, look at these logs here. They're holding the weight. If you look at the smaller ones in the balcony, they're built on the social statements, on a specific topic. And all of these usually, it's not like the presiding bishop says we need a statement on something. Most of these come from our synods or congregations with a request. So for example, suicide prevention. A family in a church, as I recall, it was North Carolina, had a couple had a daughter who committed suicide. They went to their pastor and asked, what does the church teach about suicide? And the pastor said, I really don't know. I can tell you, I can give you counseling, but I need to know more of what our church's guidance is around this. And so the pastor took this to this to the next level up, which is the synod and the bishop, and the synod together passed a memorial to the churchwide assembly asking for a social message on suicide prevention. And so we have that. And because of that, our advocacy office, we are in some of the implementation of that, we advocate for suicide prevention funding in the federal budget. That's one thing that we do because we have this message. And so then we have all these other different pieces, sexual exploitation, human trafficking. We do a lot of work on human trafficking globally and in our states, our Wisconsin state office, because there's that's emerged as a major issue because of the transit across the state, the trafficking of children and women that happen there. So you can see the rest of these. So these also help frame and give us a basis for what we do. And so what goes into making a social document, a pressing issue, studying of scripture with attention to the American mindset, I don't really like that word, but and the political situation in our country, application of theology, social analysis in the document, that's a very abbreviated thing. And so right now for this, why do I keep doing that? Oh. Hold on. So right now in church and state, we're in this little session here, listening and study, the task force. After this, later this fall, after it's approved by the Conference of Bishops and Church Council, we'll have a draft study document. It's not going to have any answers. It's going to have lots of questions that you can, if you, I will pass this around. If you want to keep informed on this process, you will receive updates. And then we're going to have all across the ELCA for a good 9 months study and feedback on these. Then finally, a proposed social statement in about 2 years that will again study and not feedback, study and discussion, and then it will go before the churchwide assembly in 4 years or so for adoption, and then it will be ready for our advocacy and use. So now I'm doing this one. I do just want to say, what was interesting at the churchwide assembly where this church and state document was approved, it was in 2019, and there was a lot of concern is that we need teaching now, coming up on the election. And so we actually created already a social message that we had enough policy language for on government and civic engagement, discipleship and democracy. This is a very short document. It gives some short-range guidance, but some of the affirmations in it is, it's our understanding that government is good. I know it doesn't, I don't feel like that every day, but we recognize that God instituted government as one of the ways in which we organize our life together, and that the role of government is to promote justice, well, it's to restrain evil and promote the good. After that, what form it takes, we don't have a lot of, a dog in that fight. But that we also expect Lutherans as citizens or members of the society to live out this as a calling from God. Lutherans were, early in the Reformation, church and state were so melded. Luther particularly saw in our confessional documents, there's a vocation to government service. We hold it in very high esteem, which means we have high standards that we need to remind our officials about. but that we have a responsibility to make government function well, not to abandon our democracy, but to engage in it in a spirit of robust civic duty. And that's that, and that our discipleship happens not just in the realm of the church, not just in the realm of charity, but in the public life of government and what we do. And then finally, just as an example of some of the things that happen in that outcomes of social statements, this is from our church in criminal justice, which guides all the work that we do in DC on sentencing reform death penalty and many of our state offices working in other ways on youth sentencing guidelines. They've done some good work on that. But you make, just so that you see, you know, here are some particulars from just this one statement, that we see that God has a hand, you know, in, you know, working in that, that we have civil government and the criminal justice system. This falls under God's sphere of concern. It's not something out there. We recognize, you know, the fundamental principles of the U.S. criminal justice system, such as due process of law, but we also see many of the flaws and deficiencies of the current system, and particularly a focus and a critique of mass incarceration as a percentage of population in terms of the racial inequities in sentencing, and a call for addressing that social harm of our mass incarceration system. The statement takes on the role of racism in our criminal justice system. We affirm the vocation of those who work in it as one way of serving God, and heard from, you know, in the process of creating this statement, heard from people in the penal system and talk about their work as vocation. And then a direct advocacy outcome on private prisons is that one of the things we work on in our advocacy ministry is we do corporate social responsibility, which is working through shareholder resolutions, and that we've developed a screen that our church makes no investments in private prison systems, and we encourage Lutherans to do the same in their own investment life. We are actually right now doing looking at expanding the private prison screen to cover immigrant detention too, as we've seen changes in you know, how the private prison system warehouses people and changes in that. They've turned to warehousing immigrants, and it's very profitable to maintain their profit, need to keep those numbers up. And so we recognize that as part and parcel of that same inhuman system. All right, I'm done talking. Now's the time for Emmer to get her magic fingers going. So when you think about your church or the ELCA as an entity, I have only two questions for you to give feedback to. And I'd ask that you just, for those who do, take a minute for some silence, and then just one at a time. The first question is, of the two, is what themes, ideas, topics, content do you think the task force needs to talk about or consider for the social statement? What does our church need to be addressing, speaking about, pondering, wrestling with when we talk about church, state, civic engagement, our role as disciples, to be a teaching document, to be a guide for our advocacy and action and presence in the world, and just for, you know, your average Lutheran in the pew to say, how am I to think about this? What issues are important to me? Who would like to go first? We're just gathering this. There's no attribution. Yes.
In my private life, I'm trying to deal with LGBTQ language. And I think there could be a statement. Our particular church, which is an Episcopal church in downtown Tacoma, where there are many people of color and many people of the LGBTQ, I mean, the whole justice thing just should revolve around us. And we look at ourselves and say, oh, aren't we cute? We're all lily white. And actually, it's not true. We just don't know. But we're trying to get the LGBTQ community involved, and we do get them involved. Sometimes we don't even know that they are there. We need to have a language that's inviting, and I think we're getting there. We're working on it, and we talk about it even from the pulpit. So that's that's my thinking about that right now. It's of course very difficult, but we do have some families with two moms and two dads. There's three families like that, and our priest has been a Lutheran pastor, a Roman Catholic, Franciscan monk, and is now an Episcopal priest. So everywhere it comes from him, also has a partner, and I think they're married now. Anyway, so it's really exciting. Really, it is.
So thank you. There's some resources I can point you to. I'm actually not going to be responding or engaging with comments. We're just getting these down to submit, but then I'm making notes for things to come back to when there's a question attached. Yeah. And then I saw the hand behind you.
I was just a clarifying question. The statement you're working on is church and state specifically. Is that?
Yes.
And so this question is kind of about that, or is this really as open as anything?
This is about church and state.
Okay.
So this is, and this input will go to the task force, which will help shape what is in the study doc. You know, it'll be a multiple part study document for congregations to respond to learn from, talk about, and then there'll be another input phase from that.
Right. Tweak what I said.
No, that's okay. What I'm thinking about. I've caught the news a few times. I've been up here almost 2 weeks, but the argument in our current society about the roles of the branches of government seems very, very important right now. As the Supreme Court makes decisions that overturn decades of precedent and say, "Well, this belongs to the state legislature. Well, this belongs to Congress," or agencies don't have the authority any longer to actually make policy, that has to all be done by Congress. That seems really a recipe for gridlock and powerful people to continue staying in power. So what is the balance of power conversation, I guess?
Yes.
Would we want to have a social statement about immigration into the United States? That seems to be a pretty hot topic, at least illegal.
Okay. Mine is more engineering comment. I don't think that the average Lutheran or the average congregation has a clue that there are all these statements and all these quite powerful or directive comments, like about mass incarceration. I think most, just my thoughts, but I think the vast majority of Lutherans would be shocked to say the Lutheran Church actually is concerned with the fact that we have more prisoners than any other country, or that we're all the different things that you listed. So I think there's some huge disconnect that before we even need to do anything more, we need to acquaint and educate all of us that the church does have these things. Because I think, historically the Lutherans have always said, let the government do its thing and we'll be good people, but we don't need to be connected with social action. So.
I think kind of in a way building off of that is, if we do think it's important to be involved in the government, something with voting and encouraging like civic engagement in the church, and maybe that would be having voter registration at church as a way to access it, having ballots available, information about candidates and local policy.
I also, I'm building on that, a larger framing about what is the role of the church in supporting the public good, and the notion that things shouldn't just be for individuals, that we're contributing to a public good, whether it's education, whether it's any of the institutions that we're considering. How would church help re-establish maybe a collective view of the public good?
Go ahead.
Oh, I don't know if there is something, but as someone who has loved ones who are immunocompromised, like responses to global pandemics with the collective mindset of, vaccines and masking and decisions that are for the health of the community.
This is a background thing, and I think maybe the bigger question is how do we present this to congregations and people, somewhat controversial issues. And I wonder if it would be helpful to do a little thing on the history of the church's involvement in society. For example, years ago, early in the country, the church looked out like it does and said, what needs to be done? What's not been doing? And so they built universities. Most of the grand universities, started out as church schools and still have chapels in the East Coast. And we got into it. I went to one of those Lutheran ones. And then they saw, hospitals. They need hospitals. We got to do something about that. Almost every hospital I've been in is like Good Samaritan, Emmanuel, Saint, someone. And then in our church, for example, when I was going to seminary and pastor, the whole social thing was about, retirement centers, and, that was the big need. And then immigration after Vietnam, Lutheran immigrate. And those are not controversial things. Those are just, that's just our reality that we grew up with, and they're good things. But this is that same kind of thing. So we're looking out, so what needs to be done now? And how do we, and I don't know if that would be helpful or not, but I think that's an important question, is how do we get this stuff in front of people and talk about it like you mentioned. Does that make sense?
I'd like to see the church weigh in on gun control.
Yeah.
It's really hard not to respond to all these.
Okay.
I bet.
Anyone else? Yeah.
For me, homelessness and the church's response and the government's response.
I don't know if this fits exactly, but a couple things come to mind. One, the concept of social media and the way that's presented and distributed, and its addictive nature. And if there could be policy around just how inundated we are with it. Right? Does our phone have to ping when we're at dinner with our family, for example? And I know they give you the option, like, you don't have to, it's your choice, you get the freedom, but it's still, people made that decision, to do that, to make that happen. But the other piece to that is mental health services. So, and the causality of that, or causation, or correlation. So it'd be interesting to see, especially now with the pandemic, the amount of mental health services that are needed, and just the invitation to talk about it, and to talk about what people are going through, and just making it more the norm.
I have just two comments on the state church relationship. I think I would really hope that the ELCA could, in their statement, make a very strong statement about the need for civic education. I think we've raised three or four generations now that have a very fundamental misunderstanding of how our government operates. I think we have become very complacent on issues like the term substantive due process, which was created or interpreted to create some of the rights and things that we're now seeing backslid. I think we relied on people like Anthony Kennedy for a long time without understanding how our government should be operating. So I hope in the statement we talk about the importance of civic education in our public schools and in our national life. The second comment I would make is I am very deeply comfortable with the ELCA getting involved in public policy positions and advocating for legislation. At the state and local level and the federal level, I have an instinctual reaction to the idea that the ELCA would be involved in the political process, which I think are two different things. And I see a trend in American Christianity of being very comfortable with being involved in the political process. And I worry very much about the pollution that that would give to churches. And so I think there's something that we need to be very careful of as you write the statement about our definitions and our terms. Because I think there is, again, going back to my first point, I think Americans do not understand, and I don't mean to be too broad-stroked here, but I think as a population, as a civic community, we do not understand how to engage with each other civically in public policy issues.
I think going with that a little bit, as a public school teacher, hearing about teachers getting in trouble for teaching about racist history and ethnic studies being banned, church coming out with a stance on the how public schools operate and are trying to hopefully be less racist structures and more about empowerment and liberation. And so, yeah.
Okay. We'll move to the second question, and then I have some information I'd like to share for some of the questions that were raised, or some directions to point people. But I was going to say something else, and it's gone out of my head. But I just want to say thank you for it. There's a lot of rich things that have been presented here. And I'm really thankful for the thoughtfulness you're putting in. So the next question, and I think, you know, some of the comments have gotten into this, is not just what the content should be, but when we're talking about an effective social statement, is one that's used, right, that people know about, and that our church has guidance. And I think you can think in terms of format, of educational tools, of appealing to people coming from diverse backgrounds and perspectives, you know, around this is what will make it effective so that it is has deep reach and broad use.
I would just hope one of the stakeholders that you could really very much consider engaging early, often, and throughout is the under 30 crowd.
Yeah, I was just thinking that for a second.
I think we're very worried about organized churches in the United States losing the market share to independent churches or non-aligned churches who are very savvy and very good, like Merritt said about destination churches, about losing the under 30 crowd with their, you know, I'm sorry to be cynical, but very savvy marketing. And I think ELCA and many other churches are very bad at it. And I think we are losing that generation.
Well,
and so I hope we do that early enough and make that a priority.
Yeah, and with the sort of graying of churches. We need young people who are going to follow these things through for the next 30 plus years.
Kind of building off of that as well, I was wondering if there was a way the ELCA could partner with universities that are ELCA universities in either having classes teaching about this or having groups that put these practices into practice.
Yeah, good idea.
I wonder if there could be multiple entry points to some of the statements. I think of maybe the under 30 crowd would have a very different entry point than my folks.
You mean how they engage with the process?
I guess I worry when so much of what is out there about Christianity in these social issues come from a very conservative, very judgmental perspective. I think defining what perspective this statement is coming from, I think, is important to get people to engage with it in the first place. I honestly, when I hear Christianity and politics, I often turn it off thinking it doesn't represent me or the Jesus that I believe in. So I think saying where are we coming from here would be important as a part of it.
That occurs to you in the middle of the night, I'm in Chalet 9, just come and knock on the door. No, they can just bring it to you, right, as our scribe. So what will happen is, I mean, just your raw material, you know, has been written down pretty much verbatim, and it is going to go like that to the task force, where it is going to, you know, flow together with, you know, what's been contributed from listening groups around the country. That are intentionally done in different communities, in Indian country, with youth and young adults, with in different racial and ethnic groups within the United States that have different experiences of being in this country, some intentionally with, you know, newer immigrants or new citizens, and so, you know, really trying to get as much of diversity as possible to come into this. This is now bonus time, and I will quickly give responses, you know, to some of you are asking for resources, or could we do this, or, and then glad to engage afterwards, you know, as well, you know, today or any other day. My dad taught Greek at a seminary. He was a New Testament professor, and he would teach Greek, you know, before starting the New Testament classes with students, and he said, the problem with learning Greek is not the Greek, it's that students don't know English grammar, you know, and so you can't learn the Greek until you have that down. And so I think the same thing with the civics education, you know, it's, I definitely didn't have it, and I think that deficit shows, you know, how much the statement should go into giving that, but there's going to have to be some kind of groundwork done, because people are coming from different understandings of, you know, what our system is, and, you know, talking about the changes going on in the power and the balance or not between our three branches is I think highlighted, you know, in new and stark ways after this Supreme Court term, certainly. On immigration, we do have a social message on immigration, and there's also a lot in our peace statement. We not only work with Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service that does resettlement here in the U.S., but we also have a migration policy staff person in D.C. who helps live out that through a program called Amparo, which started as a collaboration with churches in Central America, Honduras, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Mexico, around the crisis of children, migrant minors, coming to the U.S. it's now expanded to all of Latin America, and now we're moving into a global migration strategy, but where our advocacy is informed by our partners in different countries. And so we work on issues of asylum, U.S. border policy, but also human rights and disaster response in the nations where people are fleeing climate change, gender-based violence, civil conflict. And so our migration work is about the root causes, as well as the treatment of those who come to our borders and making sure that their asylum claims, continues to be a big problem, that their asylum claims are given due process there. No one knows that we have this teaching. That is correct. It's sad. I know congregations who do take these out and study them. It often is the roster leader, the pastors or deacons who often lead the educational work, decide how much or whether they will use them. But I would also invite everyone to fish one out and say, hey, can we study this? On the ELCA website, each has their own page. There are study materials for them. Some of them are really old. And I do not think very engaging. The newer statements have video resources. On Friday, when we talk about public testimony, I'm actually going to use a clip, the Women in Justice, or the Faith, Sexism, and Justice social statement, which was the last one passed, has video, video lessons that and clips and some different ways to engage that I think are very helpful and speak in new ways. I know about them because I have to use them every day. But on voting and supporting civic engagements, we have a program called ELCA Votes that is about, does a number of things. It comes out of a resolution that came to a churchwide assembly on voting rights. And so it gives us our mandate to work on voting rights. At the national level, we're not so promising. But our state public policy offices and our synods and our bishops and congregations working at the state level are very involved in that, as well as voter education, voter registration drives. We have guides and resources there for how does a church participate in electoral activity in a nonpartisan way and stay within IRS guidelines. That's really important. What can you do? What do you need to steer clear of? And then providing some tools like that. And there's a lot of activity going on ELCA Votes this year, of course. Role of the church in the public good, and I forget who was talking about that, but we're also talking about taxation, which again, we don't have very clear language about when we talk about issues of taxation, which are very important. When we look at revenue, and I'm hoping this statement will address that for us as well. Public health. We do have a health statement, but I think when it comes to a government mandate for something, how do we respond to that? As citizens and as members of the public, and as members of the church to promote and support, or there may be times to oppose. Things like that. On gun control, I wish we had more on gun control. We do have a social policy resolution that gives us leeway to work on background checks and assault weapons, which we do. At our state level, there's a lot going on. Again, sometimes that's where the action, or where there's more progress being able to be made. But we have a social message on community violence. So it's not just on gun control, but it's also about the problem of violence in our society, of which guns are, and their prevalence and their use are one expression, but trying to look at that as a whole. What else am I missing here? Civic engagement, involvement in the political process. I think what was raised at the end, I think in the process of making this, it can be a tool for congregations to give another narrative about what it means to be a Christian active in political life. Because I think that narrative, most of my good friends are Quaker or not terribly tied, you know, to a church or a faith community from my high school, college group, who I'm still very close with. And it's really interesting hearing them talk about what they see and read about Christianity is not, and because they know me, that they know that's not the whole story, but they're informed by what they read. And I think we have a different narrative. We have a different vision. And hopefully a way to do that as Lutherans, again, not just for ourselves, but because for future generations. I do just want to say, for those interested in what's opportunities for youth and young adults in this, ELCA Young Adults has a lot of wonderful opportunities for considering this. Right now, we're cooperating with LWF to send some young adults to the UN Climate Conference in Egypt in the fall. There's always a youth delegation that goes there. And we also offer year-long fellowships for young adults in our DC and state public policy offices. Because we need advocates in future generations, to be shaping those leaders on this. We're at time, but I'm staying here. So I'm glad to chat about anything, and for those for whom coffee is calling and getting ready for lunch, I say go in peace.
Thank you.
And then I work in DC.
I forget how close everything is.
Yeah, yeah, so yeah. It's